So, if anybody knows me, even if you don't, I'm kind of a golf nut. I love golf. And I remember, this is an old club, but I remember when I first played golf. It was 4th of July, 1997, at a big event at a club that my, at the time, girlfriend, her family was a member at. And we were playing this short little course, and we come up to this hole, probably 3 or 4 or so, and it wasn't very long, it was maybe 115 yards, and really, I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't know what I was supposed to do with the clubs. I didn't know what I was supposed to do with distances. So whatever she said, I did, right? So that's what I did. So she took out this guy, this driver, and she swung and hit. And I'm like, okay, I guess that's what I'm supposed to do. So this 115-yard hole, I pull this thing out. And out of all the times, I actually got a hold of the ball. And one unique thing about this hole is right behind the green was a house. So I swing with everything in me, got a hold of it, and actually hit the house behind the green. Thankfully, no glass shattered or anything like that. But what it did, it set off something inside of me. I'm like, that was pretty awesome, right? And it kind of started off my whole infatuation with golf, and I loved it. But there was something that happened. So my friend said a very magic phrase. She says, "That's okay. Hit again. Take a mulligan." I'm like, "What is a mulla? What?" And she says, "A mulligan. It's you get a hit again with no penalty. You get to take it as if that score never counted. We won't even believe it happened. We'll go apologize to the homeowners. We'll be fine. The score doesn't count. Hit a mulligan." I'm like, "I love this game." Right? See, I grew up playing football and baseball. Look, you don't get mulligans. You don't get do-overs. Right? You throw an interception, you hit a batter or something like that, you don't get a do-over. This game was awesome. And so I took my mulligan, and it was absolutely incredible. And as I was thinking about this mulligan in golf, part of me was wondering, like, wouldn't it be great, I think, at times to have a mulligan in life? Maybe you're okay with everything, but there's times where it's like you look back and you've made a decision, you had an experience, you did something. It's like, man, I wish I could do that over. Wouldn't that be great? You get pulled over for speeding. Oh, wait, time out, officer. Mulligan. Start over. I really wasn't speeding, right? There's things in our lives. You get the nerve to ask out that cute guy or cute girl, and you say, "What's a girl like me and a guy like you?" And you just, yeah. You know, and you stumble over the words, and it's bad. I say, "Can I get a mulligan?" And do it over and ask it over. Or maybe it's a little worse and you wore spandex shorts to school in high school. Mulligan, please, mulligan, right? There are things in our lives that we would rather forget. And at certain times in our lives, I think we could all at some point maybe want to go back and replay something. We might want to go back and redo something. Maybe those times where we said something to someone that really hurt them. Maybe we did something that we was, man, that was a really boneheaded thing and I got in a lot of trouble, or I did something really, really stupid and want to be a mulligan and I want to go back and do it. Maybe there's something in us that we just hide over and over and we want to kind of just put it on the back burner, but we want to mulligan, we want to do it over where there's no penalties. We just take an eraser and erase that part of our lives and we say, let's start over, right? We all need and want sometimes a mulligan in our lives. Today we're going to look at a story found in John chapter 21, and if you're a guest with us, the words will be on the screen, or you can, there's a Bible there in the pew, or the pew, the seat in front of you, or you, if you have your Bible, that'd be great too. But we're going to see a story today about a guy who missed the opportunity of a lifetime. He turned his back and betrayed his best friend, and some of us know what that feels like. To be betrayed. Some of us, if we're honest with ourselves, have betrayed somebody else on that level. Chances are, we've done something. But there is a story here, and the story is a guy named Peter. And he had an opportunity to really stand for his best friend, Jesus. But here's the great part, is that missed opportunity is not where the story ended. The story continues on and understands that we have a God who offers forgiveness and we have a God of second chances. We have a God who is going to give us a mulligan. So John chapter 21, verse 1, let's look at this together. "Later, Jesus appeared again to the disciples beside the Sea of Galilee. This is how it happened. Several of the disciples were there: Simon Peter, Thomas, nicknamed the twin, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other disciples. Simon Peter said, "I'm going fishing." "We'll come too," they all said. So they went out in the boat, but they caught nothing all night. At dawn, Jesus was standing on the beach, but the disciples couldn't see who he was. He called out, "Fellows, have you caught any fish?" "No," they replied. Then he said, "Throw your net on the right-hand side of the boat, and you'll get some." So they did, and they couldn't haul in the net because there were so many fish in it. Then the disciple Jesus loved said to Peter, "It's the Lord." When Simon Peter heard it was the Lord, he put on his tunic, for he had stripped for work, jumped into the water, and headed to shore. The others stayed with the boat and pulled the loaded net into the shore, for they were only about 100 yards from shore. When they got there, they found breakfast waiting for them: fish cooking over a charcoal fire and some bread. "Bring some of the fish you've just caught," Jesus said. So Simon Peter went aboard and dragged the net to the shore. There were 153 large fish, and yet the net hadn't torn. "Now come and have some breakfast," Jesus said. None of the disciples dared to ask him, "Who are you?" They knew it was the Lord. Then Jesus served them bread and fish. This was the third time Jesus had appeared to his disciples since he had been raised from the dead. Now I imagine if I was Peter, I'd be having these thoughts like, something about this situation seems really, really familiar. Because the first time Peter met Jesus, it was in a boat. It was at a shore. Jesus was wanting to speak to the people, but there was such a large crowd, Jesus had to pull back a little bit to get some space and to get enough breathing room, really. So he gets into Peter's boat, and they push off from shore just far enough that he can speak to the people and have some breathing room. And he does that, and he gives this message, and it's changing, and it's awesome. And he says, "Peter, let's go fishing. Let's continue out." Now, here's the deal. Peter was a professional fisherman. All day the day before, Peter was out fishing, and he caught absolutely nothing. He says, "All right, let's go. Whatever you say." And they go out fishing, and Jesus says, "Cast your net on this side." And they says, the story picks up in Luke 5:6, because the fish took in so many that the boat began to sink. It was such a large take. Now look at this in Luke chapter 5. When Simon Peter realized what had happened, he fell to his knees before Jesus and said, "Oh Lord, please leave me. I'm such a sinful man." For he was awestruck by the number of fish they had caught, as were the others with him. In other words, Peter said, "Hey Jesus, I'm too messed up to be hanging out with you. Leave. I can't even be around you. Did you realize what just happened? I'm such an absolute mess." How many of us have said those same exact words? "Jesus, I look at me. I'm not good enough for you. Like, you do such amazing things, and then look at me and look what I have done." And so Jesus addresses Peter directly, and he pretty much just says, "Hey Peter, you know what? We'll work on that. We'll fix that. Don't worry. Just come follow me. Let's get this fixed." So back to the story in John chapter 9, and Peter jumps out of the boat, and he doesn't even see, like, he doesn't even see what it is, but he knows who it is. He knows it was Jesus to the shore. And so Peter gets to the shore, and here's another type of fishing miracle. So they're busy catching all the fish, right? Peter gets to shore, and Jesus is already cooking the fish. Pretty cool. Now, fish for breakfast, I don't know. But they're having fish, right? And Peter watches as Jesus is cooking, and he's cooking on this charcoal fire. And if I was Peter, I'd be flashing back and almost like, I'm ready to run away. I'm kind of scared right now, and I kind of want to run, because here's the deal. 3 days before, Peter was standing in front of another charcoal fire, very similar to this. And three times, Jesus betrayed his best friend. He completely denied him. He said, "I don't know this guy. I don't want to be around him. He wasn't a part of me. I wasn't a part of him." Three times he did that around the same charcoal fire. And here's Peter standing with Jesus. Maybe you haven't denied your best friend. I hope not. But we deny a lot of other things. We deny, "I wasn't scared," right? "I'm not scared." We deny that our pants don't fit quite the way they used to. We deny things in our lives, like looking at certain websites. We deny that we have a problem with something. We deny that we have sin in our lives. We deny that sin sometimes even exists. Most of us aren't in the street yelling, "I deny Jesus." Most of us are not doing that. I get that. But there are many, many times that we deny Jesus. We deny Jesus with our choices and our actions. We deny Jesus with our relationships. Yeah, God, I know I shouldn't date or marry this person. I get it. I know I shouldn't deliberately avoid or hate this person, but, and we deny. God, I know who should control my life. I know that God is asking me to go here and do this, but, and we deny Jesus. We deny Jesus with our resources. God, I know that you asked me to give back to you my tithe. I know I should give a brand new pair of shoes to this person instead of my old junky ones. We deny. We deny Jesus. And just like Peter, when we deny Jesus, we fail. We don't get it right. But here's the beauty about this story, is it doesn't end there. The story absolutely does not end there because after Peter denied Jesus three times, Jesus went on trial. He goes in front of a judge of the time, and he was accused of things he never did. He was beaten and sentenced to death. And on the way, he's carrying this cross, this big wooden beam, and he's along the way, he's spit on, and he's whipped, and he's beaten, and he's a mess. So he's given a death penalty. And to what Easter is about, he dies and he goes to the grave. And 3 days later, and this is Easter Sunday, he conquers death. Now get this. We don't even understand that. Can you imagine going to your local cemetery, somebody pops out and goes, "Surprise!" Right? How creepy would that be? Like, we love zombie movies, I get it, but this isn't a zombie. It's like a Jack in the Box, right? But that's what he did. That is Easter Sunday. He overcame death, and he found the people that were all around him in that courtyard who denied him. He went and found those people who denied him and went straight to them and offered a second chance. God, Jesus offered a mulligan to those people who said, "I don't know him. I'm not going to be by him while this is happening. I don't want to get hurt. I don't want to die, so I'm not going to do it." Those people who denied him, Jesus went straight to him. And so Jesus overcomes death, and he goes to the beach, and he's cooking fish for breakfast, and he's with Peter. And all the other disciples are maybe over doing dishes, cleaning up the fish, whatever, and Peter's hanging out with Jesus. And it's that moment of truth, right? Peter knows what happened. Peter's got to come to grips with reality. He's got to acknowledge what happened, and he doesn't want to. And I can imagine just like the guilt streaming over him, just filling him up like, "Oh, what is going to happen? I know I should have done things differently. I'm such an idiot. What was I thinking?" And he goes through it, and he knows that he has to talk with Jesus. He has to own up for what he's doing. And if you're anything like me, when you're in school and, you know, and the teacher's looking for volunteers, what do? Avoid eye contact, right? So I can imagine Peter's like, "Nope, I'm fine." Right? And so it's just him and Jesus around this charcoal fire. And he's already doing it. And he's thinking, "What is Jesus going to do to me? Is he going to hate me? Is he going to ridicule me? Is he going to scold me? Is he going to curse me and make me a Vikings fan? What is he going to do?" What is he going to do? And Jesus breaks all the silence, all the tension, and he asks this to Peter. "Peter, do you love me?" Notice what Jesus doesn't ask. "Now, Peter, are you sorry for what you did? Peter, do you promise not to do it again?" Right? He doesn't ask all of those questions. He doesn't ask a question in that line of thinking. He says, "Do you love me?" He puts his heart on the line and gives it back to Peter. And he's taking a chance. And it's one of those things. It's just like Jesus asked him, "Do you love me?" And Peter says, "Yes, Lord, I love you." When he was given the second chance. Now, if I'm Peter, I've got some doubts, right? See, his track record wasn't great. His track record just says, "I denied him. I didn't do things right. Okay, Jesus, yes, I do love you, but I don't know if I'm doing it right. Jesus, I do love you, I think. Jesus, I love you, but I don't know if I love you enough. See, he was probably wondering, he's like, is Jesus going to say, do you love me? Then why did you treat me like that? Because that's our human nature, right? He was probably thinking Jesus would say, if you love me, Peter, really, why did you do that? Why on earth would you deny me in front of everybody if you truly loved me? But he didn't say that. Jesus says, if you love me, feed my sheep. What in the world does that mean? Essentially, Jesus is saying, okay, Peter, get back in the game. Get back in the game. Here's your chance. Follow me if you love me. And look at this. It gets Peter upset. In John chapter 21, a third time he asked him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt that Jesus asked the question a third time. He said, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. Jesus said, then feed my sheep. And something incredible was happening that Peter didn't even understand. Jesus is taking someone who missed the opportunity of a lifetime, missed his chance, and he's going to him and says, Peter, let's try this again. Let's give this another shot. Let's take a mulligan. We're here in front of this charcoal fire. Let's do this again. You took three times. Here's your chance. In golf, there's a mental side of the game. And one of the things that happens, especially on the very first shot of the very first hole, right? It's called first tee jitters. Okay, so what you do is you get to the first tee and your ball's there and you're not loose. You're a little nervous. You got people watching you and it's just, you're kind of a mess. And so you hit the ball and you shank it terribly. I mean, it's off a tree. You probably hurt your playing partner. Who knows? It's a bad shot. And you get so frustrated and you say, oh, and you take a mulligan, tee it up, swing, and it's straight as an arrow. And you're like, why can't I just do that the first time? By the way, that's a phrase I'll say about 1,000 times this summer. Why can't I do that? See, the deal is that second shot, you get out of your way. You get out of your head. You just say, how bad could it be? I just sent my playing partner to the hospital. I lost a ball. It can't get much worse. Let's just hit the ball. And you do, and you hit it, and it's great, right? This is what's going on with Peter. Peter had missed his opportunity. He took that opportunity, and he shanked his decision. His decision to deny Jesus was a total mess. And he gets up and he just gets out of his way and he recognizes what is valuable, recognizes what's important, and he just swings and nails it. He says, Jesus, you know I love you. And that's what we hold on to him. He gets out of his way. He doesn't hold on to his mistakes. He doesn't hold on to his past. He doesn't hold on to his failures. He gets out of his own way and accepts the fact that Jesus is giving him forgiveness. And that's what Easter's all about. Easter's about a loving God who is giving you a second chance. He is giving us the greatest mulligan of all. All right, one more golf analogy and I quit, I promise. In golf, there is a term called a gimme. This is a very other great rule, all right? A gimme is when the ball is close enough to the hole, you don't have to putt it, okay? So we're assuming if I'm out playing and my partner sees my ball close to the hole, he says, that's a gimme. You can pick it up and we can just move on. I love this rule because I can't putt, okay? It's a great rule, all right? It's similar to this. Take a look at this commercial.
Pick it up.
Pick it up?
It's a gimme.
All right. Pick it up.
Gimme?
Gimme.
Pick it up!
Okay.
Think that's generous?
Gimme?
Gimme.
Nice round.
Course record.
Course record. See, unfortunately, though, the Christian life is not like a gimme. When we call on Jesus and we're followers of Jesus, it's not just a gimme into this easy, coastal life. Life is still a challenge. It's still hard. And there's many of us in this room, like Peter, including myself, where we have failed. And if Jesus were physically to walk in this room, one, that'd be awesome and scary and all that stuff. But if he physically walked into this room, we'd be terrified. Don't make eye contact, right? Because we know what we've done. We know what we've said. We know where we've been, and we don't want Jesus to see it. We don't want Jesus to experience that. But here's the beautiful thing, that we might even be tempted to run away, but the story is for those of us that have messed up. Right now, if that's you, you have a chance to stand by that charcoal fire with Jesus You don't even have to eat the fish, but you can stand by that charcoal fire and accept his forgiveness. Yeah, I know I messed up. I know I've done this. And Jesus is saying, yeah, I know that too. I know you've done all these things, but take another chance. Take a mulligan. Jesus would say to you, if you love me, get back in the game. Let's try this again. My love and my forgiveness stretches further than your failures. Because here's the deal. Just because you have failed at something does not make you a failure. Those are two mutually exclusive things. You hear that? You have failed at something, but you are not a failure. The story is about those of us who have messed up. A story of a loving and gracious God who gives us a second chance. In golf, mulligans don't cost us anything. But in life, it costs Jesus. It cost him his life. And it isn't just a word, because after Peter denied him, he went to the cross and gave his life. But it didn't end there, because he conquered death. And the Bible says that while we were still sinning, see that activeness? We are still sinning. While we're still doing it, while we're still denying him, while people are at the cross denying him to his face, he died for us and offered that forgiveness. And you may think that's just too easy, because I know somebody I've hurt and they've never forgiven me, or I can't forgive so-and-so. But Jesus and God is not so-and-so. He says, come, accept my forgiveness and take a mulligan. Let's do this again. It is too easy, but that's grace and that's mercy, and that's Easter.